Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Much of popular psychology presumes that the difficulties a person faces, addiction, depression, anxiety, or low self-esteem, are caused by and therefore must be addressed by the individual. However, we also live in a web of relationships, including family, friendships, organizations, cultures, and subcultures. This web plays a role in our struggles. Our guest today makes the provocative statement that there is no symptom that belongs only to the individual, whether that symptom is emotional, spiritual, physical, social, or financial. When we don't consider this larger web, we're more likely to feel shame about our suffering and our inability to heal our psychological symptoms. In essence, the individual may believe that their difficulty is only about them, their limits, pathologies, deficiencies, and failures. Today, we'll be exploring how we may experience deeper healing, healing that is truly sustainable and is connected to others, to family, to community, to culture, to the globe, with our guest, David Bedrick. David Bedrick is a psychological activist and ally to the unheard and marginalized voices inside individuals and the culture at large. He's a teacher, counselor, attorney, organizational consultant, and writer. He's a practitioner of process-oriented psychology, a branch of Jungian psychology. He did his clinical training at the Process Work Institute, which is inspired by the work of Arnie Mandel. Bedrick is a diplomate of the Institute. Currently, he maintains a practice as a counselor and coach for individuals and groups. He also speaks and writes on topics ranging from ethics, diversity, and relationships to dreams, diet, body image, anger, and shame. And he's a blogger for the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. He's the author of Talking Back to Dr. Phil, Alternatives to Mainstream Psychology, and Revisioning Activism, Bringing Depth, Dialogue, and Diversity to Individual and Social Change. Join us for the next hour as we explore how psychology can play a role as a social change agent with our guest, David Bedrick. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. David, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to sit across from you once more, and I would love to have you start off to say something about the difference between the way you work with psychology, process-oriented psychology or depth psychology, and that of most mainstream psychologies.
Most mainstream psychologies have an allopathic model. That means they look for something wrong. A symptom indicates an illness. If I'm down and depressed, then I have to do antidepress me. Let's say if I have anger that disturbs me, I should reduce that anger somehow. So we take the difficulties as symptoms to reduce, relieve, or get rid of in some way. And process-oriented psychology, like Jungian psychology, looks for the meaning behind things. It doesn't pathologize. I mean, I don't look at your depression as something wrong with you. Although it has to be said, some people are helped by that, are getting a diagnosis. They get relieved to know something. They may get medication that helps them, so I'm not against that. But nonetheless, I would look at depression and say, something's taking that person down. There's a meaning behind there. Perhaps they're being pressed down, depressed, or perhaps they need to go down lower. So whatever I see, I think there's something underneath that to discover, and what we discover is going to be useful to that person in their lives.
So let's take depression, for example. That's a good one because it's a big one in our culture today.
Yes.
People are depressed. And we get, let's say, I know you give an example. There was someone very, very famous and that whom we all loved, and that was the actor Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And he suffered from some depression. And you talk about his diagnosis and the way it was presented in the media and the way mm-hmm. that, in a way that maybe didn't give us the full picture of a deeper understanding. Can you help us with that example?
Yeah. I mean, one of the difficulties when the media highlights a particular person, like a celebrity, here's Robin Williams, he's depressed, is the first thing that happens is we all look at that person. There they are out there, like a scapegoat for the culture, like a symbol for something that I, David, you, Justine, don't have. So it removes it from us. That tends to not be so useful because we have elements of the culture at large that help, is that the right word, that lead to depression. For instance, if you're a more mainstream-looking person, I'm a more or less a white male, I have a Jewish background. As a white male, my depression is more likely to be telling me, drop out a little bit. I used to practice law for 10 years, and I did some counseling with people in law firms. When those people, when attorneys reported being depressed to me, that usually meant they were working too hard. Something wasn't getting up. Something wanted to lay down. They'd say, help me get going again. Give me an antidepressant. Help me lift myself up. But that wasn't only so useful. Those people were, their depression meant drop out. You don't need a drug to drop out. You can take a break. Maybe it's too much for you. And that, so that's a social issue in that way. I'm talking about a white male, but let's say it's a black female. Not always, but more likely that person is not empowered by the culture as much. That person could be relying on their own personal power, for sure, to make things happen in their lives. But then there's forces against that woman, race and gender, two strikes against her, some people would say. There's a force pushing that person down. So her depression is more likely to be something on top of her, a weight, a culture that doesn't advance her based on her own capacities, that's going to pay her 70 cents on the dollar or something like that. If they're going to listen to her name and not hire her for a job, there's studies like that. So that person is going to be more likely needing to be lifted, help me fight against the forces against me. So even there in depression, I'm starting to expand it. We're seeing it could be different depending on culture, depending on how much the culture supports you. Like a white man gets more of that privilege and black female would get less.
You know, David, I can think of an example of that that's
yeah.
very vivid that's going on right now. So we're sitting together. It's April 2017.
Yeah.
And there on the media, there's a representative from California. Her name is Maxine Waters.
Mm-hmm.
She's a black woman, powerful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's being interviewed for various reasons on the media.
Mm-hmm.
And she recently was picked out and mm-hmm. criticized mm-hmm. for her hair. Mm-hmm. Someone criticized her for her hair. That would never come up for a white male representative. Is that an example of that kind of stereotyping and the kind of mm-hmm. energy that, let's say, that black woman is facing in our culture.
Yes. It's a really important example. I think I remember the example. It was Bill O'Reilly, the Fox radio host. And he said something like, your hair looks like James Brown's hair, another black man. But it wasn't said like as a compliment. It was said as a dismissal.
And it had nothing to do with what she, the richness of her answers.
That's right. And then it, compounding that problem. So then there's a Bill O'Reilly, and he says something. Some people would say that's racist. I would say that, but some people don't like to use that term. To me, it just means there's a bias that is diminishing to that particular person or hurtful to that particular person. So it is. We could call that what we will. But then what happens is a number of people in the culture gather around. Some people say, that's terrible, that's racist. But a number of people say, that's not that big a deal. Why is she making a big deal about that? That's not anything. That person, that part of the culture that says that doesn't matter, that's not a racially hurtful thing to do, that dismisses the insult. There's an insult, right? I'm sitting here talking to you about something intelligent and I start talking about your hair, right? In a derogatory way. Why is a man doing that to a woman at this point? We're on New Dimensions talking about intellectually about certain topics. So that's an insult. It's a put down. I'm putting you in a little box that doesn't have to do with the intelligence you're representing to me. And her, in this case, Maxine Waters' intelligence, her power, her senatorial leadership, et cetera. So that's happening. And then people around say, it's not a big deal. This is so hurtful. This is what I would love to wake up the culture to. That particular dismissal is a psychological thing. Justine, it's equivalent to if I work with a person who comes to see me and says, I was abused. I was hurt. I was sexually abused as a child. I was in a marriage and I'm being hurt, beat up. And I say something like, ooh, it's not that big a deal. Get over it. You sure it happened that way? That statement, that dismissal of the injury that person brings to me is as injurious as the initial hurt. It feeds into that person a psychology that says, don't take yourself seriously. Don't believe yourself. Don't respond and react as if you're being hurt. So that doesn't just happen to Maxine Waters when she gets spoken about like that. And then people say it's not a racial or a gender issue. That communicates to black women and women in the culture. Don't take it seriously when you're demeaned or dismissed because of race and gender. That's painful.
So what are you saying that embedded in that kind of dismissal of someone, that injury to someone, is a bigger web of history that is carried by that individual that has been part of a group, a culture that has been marginalized?
That's exactly right. And then it's exactly right because the dismissal is around so much. Well, racism was then, or we had a black president, whatever you want to say, something that says it's not a big deal anymore. And if that person comes to me for personal therapy, let's say a woman comes to me for personal therapy, then she says, I have a low self-esteem. What's going on with me? I eat too much. What's going on with me? And if I listen to her in her thoughts, she's critical of herself. I don't do this, I don't do that, I'm not doing this right, I don't look good, I'm not speaking enough, I'm too quiet, I'm speaking too much. That inner criticism is a dismissal of her all the time. It's an internalized sexism almost all the time. And I've talked to and worked with many women who are active feminists in the culture who don't know that inside themselves.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with David Bedrick, and he is the author of Revisioning Activism, Bringing Depth, Dialogue, and Diversity to Individual and Social Change. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, davidbedrick.com. And he spells his last name B-E-D-R-I-C-K, davidbedrick.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
here with David Bedrick. He's on the faculty of the Process Work Institute. He's an attorney, and he's the author of Revisioning Activism, Bringing Depth, Dialogue, and Diversity to Individual and Social Change. Mm-hmm. And David, as you were talking about the culture, so to speak, that we all live in, I know that we are in a market-driven culture, and in that way, when we were earlier talking about depression, what we, I want to say value, but it's our bias is that people have high energy, that they're productive, that they progress. This is like the bias that if you act in these ways, you are normal. If you do not act in these ways, then you are pathologized, or that you have a symptom of something that needs fixing. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of where we're stated?
Yes, very much so. It makes me, your question, Justine, makes me think again about social issues. I'm thinking about Native American land and relationship. And a specific case, a legal case, that has gone on for a long time in different steps. Most recently, I think it was in the 1980s, when the Sioux Nation was offered a settlement for the Black Hills land. And that settlement now is worth over $1 billion, and the Sioux Nation has not touched that money. How come? They said, we cannot be bought, the land cannot be bought. And our relationship with the land and our relationship with the animals, it's a whole different value system. Relationship. You can't pay me, compensate me financially for that. It's not a market-driven issue. So they've put that money aside. I was amazed by that.
That is an amazing thing. And I can think of also the way a Native indigenous person who has not been taken from that land, who has ancestry in that land, mm-hmm. they really belong to that land. They know that mm-hmm. land. They can walk that land in a way that, in a rootedness that so many mm-hmm. of us in our mm-hmm. migratory culture are not feeling.
Right. Isn't it incredible that I think we live on this land? I'm a white person. I live in New Mexico. I live on that land. What does it mean to live there every day and not think of myself as on land that's not only mine or that has injury associated with it? Of course, people used to live there, and that land was taken from them and then offered money, the insult. Mm-hmm. It's an insult to those people. In some culture, they would say, great, how much?
Yeah,
let's figure
right,
it out.
Right.
But this person, it's an insult. What does that mean to live there? It's an unconscious kind of a privilege. It's so difficult to say those things because it's not a high and mighty righteous statement I'm making. We live on those other people's lands. We owe people something. It's a real feeling thing. I remember once we were doing a conflict resolution with Arnie Mandel and a world work. And we invite people all over the world to do conflict work. And we invited two people who were Aboriginal Australian. They were coming to United States, to Oregon, and they got off the plane. Two people met them and drove them to Oregon. And the first night of the conference, they're not there. The second day, they're not there. The second night, they show up with four or five Native Americans, and they say, we're here. We had to find the people who this land originally belonged to and get their okay to come here. And we said, why didn't you just come? Is it just a nicety? Is it a, what is it about? And they said, how can you expect to resolve any conflict unless you have permission to be here?
So this is, first of all, I want to say that I was there at that world work. I was with Michael. We were there for those 3 weeks. It was the most powerful time of my life. It really was incredible. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say all of that you're talking about, this has something to do with the work that you do, the depth psychology that you do. It's not easy what you do. It's not an easy formulaic sort of way of looking at symptoms, and you're looking much deeper. The conversation is going much deeper, and that's not easy. Do you have any advice as to how we can begin to open our eyes and hearts and see in this deep way?
I'm so glad you asked that. This is something I've been wrestling with, because I've been teaching for about 20 years and studying with Arnie Mandel and process work for over 20 years. And Justine, it's still dawning on me what a paradigm shift it is. What I mean by paradigm shift is it's not usual for somebody to think that way. It's not usual for someone to say, I want to go on a diet, for me to say, let's find out what you're hungry for. Even if a person could sort of conceptually guess that that's true, the person is more likely to say still, I'm hungry to lose weight so I'm healthier. Isn't that it? Like, that's what I want in my life. Why can't you just give me that? And I could say, well, I could try to give you that. The research says 5 to 10% of the chance, some of the time, that will be sustainable. It almost never works. And then if I were to say more, I'd say, and it upsets me so much. I get so upset at the selling of the bill of goods around so many things, fixes that really don't work. And not only that, don't honor the depth of who we are, of where we come from, of the land we live on, of the skin colors that we have, of the histories that we have, of the ancestors we have. All those kinds of things are left out. So what would I recommend? That's difficult. Connect with your body first. Ask yourself, am I male? Am I white? Am I black? Am I gay? What does that have to do with what's going on for me? If I'm a woman, does that play into what's happening for me? If I'm a Jewish person like me, does that play into what's happening for me? That social question is really big. It ties us to the web of relationships.
You know, let's take weight, for example, because I know that you devote a whole section in your book on weight and diet and this $60 billion industry that's selling us the goods about weight. And as I was reading this part of your book, I had this deep realization of the truth of what you're saying. And so this is my confession here. I'm in my 70s. I've had a weight problem, a weight issue for most of all my adult life. And along with my partner, Michael, the both of us together kind of walk this road. And every decade, we would gain a little more weight, a little more weight, a little more weight. And I tried everything like other people, every diet, everything. I did it all. And many people can say the same thing. And then Michael passed on in 2012. I took over New Dimensions. And for the first time in my life, in my adult life, I was without a significant other. I was standing on my own, and I took over New Dimensions and started heading it up myself. And then I noticed a year ago, it's 2017, so 2016, I started to address this weight issue again. And David, for the first time in decades, I have been successful. I'm now 75 pounds less than what I was a year ago. It was done with ease. No hunger. No sacrifice. I mean, just boom, it just happened. With a lot of support and so forth and good nutrition and all of those things. But it worked this time. And as I was reading your book, I realized, oh, it has to do with my feeling powerful, with my feeling intelligent, my stepping into my own potential. And you know me a bit. And do you have any comment on that?
Yeah. Feeling powerful, empowered, whether that's one's tenderness, one's strength, one's intelligence, one's sensitivities, various gifts, is so critical to the feeling of being oneself, to be able to be an agent for one's gifts. That sense of power is critical. If one doesn't have that sense of power, it gets expressed in some way. Food is a great way. Why? Because you can say yes and no. I can say, you shouldn't eat that. Or you could have that voice in your head and you can say, darn it, I'm going to eat it. Now, it may not sound that way inside of you because you're feeling guilty, but something you can say, I don't care what the rules are. I'm going to have that donut. I'm going to have that steak. I'm going to eat those french fries. I'm not going to do what people tell me to do. So that ability to say yes and no is a source of power. And if you can't express that in the world in a way as an agent, whether with your gifts or your career or whoever you're going to in relationships, if you can't do that way, you're going to find another way. People do that with food often or internally with their own inner voices. So it's a big thing. Why is that a big thing, especially for women? Because the diet industry is focusing mostly on women. Because women have been more disempowered by the culture. That doesn't mean any particular woman doesn't carry a lot of power. As in the Maxine Ward example, people, you, haven't found their own voices in their own sense. But the culture is going to push against the woman's power, meaning I'm not going to I'm a man. I'm not going to let you express it as freely, let you. And then you're going to have to either bow down to me or fight with me.
But it's all kind of unconscious. It's not a conscious thing like the men collectively, white men and collectively in the culture are not consciously saying, oh, we're going to put down women. If there's something else going on here and that isn't that... I guess you call it the shadow.
Yeah, it's in the shadow. Sexism as internalized as women. I can tell you how many women would come to me and they would complain for therapy and would say, last night I went to a party, I had a few glasses of wine, and I started feeling really free, but I feel terrible. Maybe I shouldn't have said this. Maybe I talked too much. Maybe I shouldn't have told this person what I think. What's going on? It's in that shadow. It was a backlash. That woman is saying, now I felt a little freer to express my opinions, just not to be a listener, a good ear for other people. Now I express myself that way, and then something inside comes against me. I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad about that. I should listen. I should be more careful. That's changing over time with generations, but it's still a huge thing. So how does that power get expressed? This is a big thing. Many women do something very subtle, but it's very obvious when if I sat there and studied 20 women in front of you, you would see it. Many women have what I call an internal yoga. That means they have a voice inside of them that they believe in. I should not eat. I should not do this. I should exercise. I should be more disciplined. And then something inside of them says no.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to speak more about that in just one moment, but I want to make sure that I remind our listeners that I'm here with David Bedrick. And he's on the faculty of the Process Work Institute. He's an attorney. He's the author of Talking Back to Dr. Phil, Alternatives to Mainstream Psychology, and also Revisioning Activism, Bringing Depth, Dialogue, and Diversity to Individual and Social Change. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, davidbedrick.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with David Bedrick, and he's the author of